Yes, I am.
Say a technical dispute, but not even a technical dispute, just a timing dispute.
It's good. It's good. Don't worry about it.
We're back for another episode. I know last week we said gamer, but that's how we roll over here. We just switch things up because apparently I fucked up a Netflix dish I had.
Wait, did you fuck it up or did Netflix fuck it up?
Let's just say Netflix fucked it up
They
on
probably
part of the
like,
show.
what it, they probably were like, gamer, what? This can't be right.
Yeah, so let's say they fucked it up for the benefits of this show, but I might have did some things to it, or whatever. But that's neither here nor there, though. So yeah,
No, but
we
we have a
consider.
good movie to review, though.
Yeah, we have an excellent movie, probably my favorite movie of 2010. That's Inception, directed by Christopher Nolan.
Should we tell people who we are?
I am the phenomenal one from MoviespoilersPodcast.com.
I am Z from EOPpodcast.com, which is iOpen Podcast.
And maybe we should go over the new rules here. I mean, well, not even so much new rules. Last week was almost a prototype show, you know.
Which what? Which everyone, even people I talked to said they liked it.
I know a lot of people. Actually, I've checked the hits on the site or whatever, and that one had the most of the week.
Yeah.
So apparently we did something right then. So basically, our original plan was just to do movies of See It and Fuck It, whatever. But I figured this is a cross promotion show, so it shouldn't be just my rating. So Z here is gonna give you guys the rating of the EOP podcast that they have, and I'm gonna give my ratings. And I'm not just gonna do See It and Fuck It movies. We're gonna do any movie that me and Z pick, and it'll be two movies up every Tuesday for you guys to vote. Whichever one wins, then that's the one we'll be reviewing for the week.
So by the end of the show, we will each have a movie for next week. And it'll be on eopodcast.com, our Facebooks, iOwn Podcast and Movie Spoilers Facebook, Blogspot. And can I give a little hype for something else that I started?
Yes, you can.
My own website, my own movie review website, thefancritic.com.
Which, goddamn, man, you're posting like five things a day.
Dude, I saw two movies today in the theaters.
I'm just like, God, that site's been up for 3 days, and that motherfucker already got like two months worth of content on it.
Hey, I gotta catch up.
I see that.
I'm gonna yeah, like up like I'm gonna be posting I Throwback Tuesday from District 9's already up there. This one will be on there. I'm for you for your reviews with Leihau. Is that how you pronounce the name, Leihau? Leihu. For like you just did Now You See Me. I'm gonna post that on the Now You See Me review that I just did.
Oh, nice. Oh,
So
that's right, because you saw it too as well, so you're
yeah.
going to review it.
So all your shows that you do are gonna be posted for that movie when I see it and review it.
Little embedding there.
Yes.
A lot of spoiling bastards out there have done that with our show in the previous past. I don't know if they do it now. They probably said, I don't like that guy phenomenal. They probably said, we missed that other one that was on there. I don't know her name or whatever, but we kind of miss her.
I forgot her name.
Yeah, I did too, whatever. I think it was called Bitch, but no,
Oh, yeah.
I would go back with that recurring joke. But anyway, so yeah. Anything else you got any news for?
Do you want to, not really. Do you want to start off with the comments before we go in, or you want to do that after?
We do end that with that, and with the comments. It ended on a good note, because like I told you last week, I've actually read one. That was the first one I've ever read before doing a show, and it was actually farming.
You still there?
Yeah, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Just got dead there for a second.
Oh, I thought you just dropped your dr drink.
Well, yeah, I took a sip,
Or
but
you dropped.
I didn't drop. I just took a sip or whatever. You know, just having a nice little drink here on a 4 o'clock
Well,
afternoon. Me
I
and
think
Andy
you need to
decided.
drink after watching After Earth.
Talk about that movie. Gonna talk. You know what? I actually listened to, cause I've just been, I don't know, I've been fascinated with that shitty ass movie or whatever. And I've just been listening to everybody else's show on it, reading reviews. I've read like 20 different reviews on it, and I was like, everybody agrees with me. They hated this movie. And then I listened to one last night, that actually does spoiler reviews as well, which I don't know why they got to keep saying the word, we're doing spoilers in the show, whatever, when they've been up for about a year now, whatever, and they keep saying that in the review, whatever. I'm like, damn, dude, the name of the show is a spoiler, whatever. And they actually praised After Earth, and I was like, well, I'm not listening to the rest of this show.
Did you say, just to let you know, if you don't know, Spill.com's got a new video review of After Earth.
That shit was funny as hell, too.
It was. I loved it. I really love when I do video reviews. I really do.
It was amazing, whatever, how they made Will Smith's ears so long.
That was so funny. God, I wish I had money to do that.
Oh, my God. But so, yeah, but After Earth.
No, forget that. That was a dream.
It was a dream, all right? It was a dream, a horrible nightmare or whatever. But Inception isn't as part of that dream, too, and that's what saved me from that nightmare, because that's a beautiful dream.
Question, how many times did you see this in theaters?
Oh, shit. Probably 6, 7 times, maybe?
It's well worth it. I've seen it 5 times. It's below Pearl Harbor. I saw Pearl Harbor 6 times. So that was my most movie, but I saw an IMAX. Oh my God. I seriously just wanted to whip my dick out and start beating off to it.
I don't blame you. I did do that or whatever. That's why I got kicked out. That's why I was supposed to eat the 6 times or whatever. I keep getting kicked out.
I mean, if this movie is just coming out in IMAX, you had to see an IMAX. It was just phenomenal. It was awesome. But I bought it the day of. I was, yeah, it just went midnight and bought it at Walmart to get it, and I probably watched it since then probably about 20 times.
I saw it the first time by myself, and then I remember when I sat there and enjoyed it so much, I walked out of there just thinking about the movie so much that I just gathered anybody I could and said, hey, you gotta come see this with me. Hey, you gotta come see this with me. You gotta come see this with me. I just took one person at a time or whatever, just go see it with me or whatever.
Random people?
Buddies of mine. Stuff.
Oh.
I took the homeless man down the street or whatever. I was like, hey, man, give me $10 if you come see this movie with me.
I thought you had, maybe the pedophile van and just, hey, kid, you want to go see me a movie?
I did. I had that Mr. Teat van or whatever with me, and I got some gymnastic kids with me to come with it. I was like, hey, guys, you want to come see a movie? Bring that dog with you or whatever. Go on the football.
But this movie really made me a fan of Leonardo DiCaprio.
Say this is the one that brought me back to really admiring his work, whatever. Because I always thought he was a good actor, but I was just like, whatever. But I think this one was the one that brought me back to saying, I love him, whatever. And my favorite actor in here, my favorite actor period is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. When I saw him in this, I was like, there goes your Spider-Man right there.
You know what? Now that you said that, that actually would have been a very good Spider-Man.
He is a great actor or whatever, and I think he would have been a perfect Peter Parker. He has Peter Parker written all over him or whatever. I'm just like, nobody cast this man as a goddamn superhero.
Yeah, he does have the nerdist qualities too.
Mm-hmm. And I bet he can play it off too. Whatever, he did that in 500 Days of Summer, where he was kind of nerdiest type or around girls or whatever. And I could see that playing well with either a Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy or whatever. So I was very disappointed when I found out that the new Spider-Man was Andrew. I was like, damn it! JGL is never good. Then I found out he's going to be Nightwing. I said, yes!
Yeah, so you got your wish. You could be a new superhero.
I got something or whatever, but they're not going to make that movie, so I'm just like, ah, what a tease.
Yeah.
But no, I'm glad you agree with me on that one, because I've been saying he played Peter Parker. I've been saying that shit for I don't know how long now.
Because when you said that, I'm like, you make a very good point, because he does have the nerdist qualities, and can be kind of badass as if he was in Dark Knight Rises.
And he's witty too, or whatever. He has
comeback. Yeah, he is very quick witted.
Yeah, and plus, I don't know if I thought this was one of the best action scenes I've ever seen, or whatever. It was him in the hallway when he was fighting the guy in the stair when he was running across the walls, or whatever. And I was like, I said, there go you goddamn Spider-Man right there.
And he didn't even need a costume.
Yeah, he didn't even need the costume. I was just like, look at that. Especially how he jumped back on the ceiling. I was just like, come on, man. This dude is pretty much posing as Peter Parker. Let's go.
Well, maybe if Sony got rid of it, maybe Marvel will take it over and reboot it.
Oh, my God. If they wanted to go with a darker Spider-Man, they should just let Nolan did it. And then there you go. Bam. Nolan would definitely would have casted Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but,
Well, Gordon Levitt's pretty much everywhere nowadays. He was in, what, three movies last year?
Hell yeah, whatever. Three movies that were phenomenal. Made my best of list or whatever. And he's got another one coming out this year, which I'm excited to see. And also, another good thing about him is you can never really tell how old he is. So he can play almost anything.
Yeah, I don't want to look it up, but I want to say he's 25 to 30.
Yeah, that's right. He's 1981. He was born, so he's about 7 years older than me. So yeah, he's over 30.
He's about my. He's gonna be. I'm gonna be 32 in August, so we're about the same age.
So yeah, and he looks younger than that, and he can play an older guy at the same time too, or whatever. So I.
with Bruce Willis makeup.
Yeah, exactly. I love that movie.
Looper was a great movie.
Yeah, very. Once again, imaginative of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But he's not the only actor in here. We got Ellen Page in here, which one of my favorite actresses.
I thought she was beautiful in this.
Oh, man, she was just phenomenal in this, whatever. You know what? This is probably the best all-star cast assembled together for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love Tom Hardy. I thought this was Tom Hardy's best role. And I love him and everything he does.
Even over Bane?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love him over Bane. I even love the movie Warrior.
That's what I was about to say. Warrior?
I love them in this one more.
Well, we also have Ken Watanabe?
Ken Watanabe?
Watanabe?
Yeah, that guy is almost one of my favorite Asian actors, actually, whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys in here are actually like my favorite. You got the Scarecrow, you got Cillian Murphy in it.
He was good. He's so creepy looking, though.
Oh my God, he's perfect. You got Marion Cotillard.
This is pretty much her breakout role, American role.
Yeah, it is. It really is, whatever. And after that, every movie she's even done, she's even done one an independent release, whatever, which was just phenomenal, as whatever. I believe it got nominated for something. I can't remember, but you got Michael Caine in here.
Short, small role, but he was still in it. Tom Berenger, who's like his first role in forever.
Yeah, you got Dilip Rao, who plays Yusuf. I mean, he was even great in here, too.
Cillian Murphy's dad, Peter Postlewaite.
Yeah, who plays Maurice Fisher.
He plays one of the guys that you always see him in a movie, and you're like, I've seen him before. Mm-hmm. He was in The Town. He was great in The Town.
Yeah, and we can't forget the man himself, the star of this, Mr. Leonardo DiCaprio.
No, and I'm just looking on Wiki right now that Brad Pitt and Will Smith were offered the role.
Oh, my fucking God. Brad Pitt probably could have did it, but Will Smith, I don't know.
Why is Will Smith turned down roles?
He turns down roles.
He turned down Matrix to do Wild Wild West.
Why does his name come up for these roles? I don't understand that. Like
he turned down Django Unchained because it wasn't the star role.
Okay, what?
Yeah.
But Will Smith, it almost seems like he just, I'm not a fucking huge fan of Tarantino, whatever. Like everybody that creeps over him, whatever. But for Will Smith to work with Tarantino, that's like a notch to knock off his belt. You know, be like, mm-hmm. I worked with this person. Tarantino's pretty huge in the industry, whatever. You know, so I don't see why he would turn something down like that. It's like Will, since when did you get the right to start turning down things or whatever? I mean, have you seen some of the shit you've made?
Well, it's ever, you know, didn't he go, like, what, six straight summers of having a blockbuster?
Yeah, he is Mr. 4th of July, so.
Well, not lately, but.
Yeah, I don't know about that no more now, but he was, like, I want to say 2 years ago when it ended, but, yeah, I don't know about now, no. Well,
yeah, so. He was pretty much Mr. Summer for a long time.
Even for the shitty ones that sucked or whatever, they still made a shitload of money.
He does make bank, I mean. Hancock, yeah, I Am Legend, Hitch.
Shits out in the bank. He shits out money or whatever. Look at them two kids, dude.
I just think he just wants to work with his son from now on. I really do.
He said that, actually. He said he doesn't want to make any more solo movies. He's just going to make movies with his son now. I said, oh, God. oh, more shit now, whatever. But that's another story here. Here we want to...
We want to talk about this greatness.
Exactly, this greatness. I think it's one of Christopher Nolan's. You know, you always see people that have their like their projects they want to work on that said that that's their passion project or whatever. I think we should
Example,
watch it.
James Cameron and Avatar.
Or Zack Snyder and Sucker Punch.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I think this is probably one of the best passion projects I've seen put together.
Yeah, and Nolan does a wonderful job. I mean, he's such a smart director. He changed Batman to make it more real.
And he didn't even know Batman.
No, he didn't, and that was the amazing thing. That's why Nolan is one of the most accomplished directors.
Has to be or whatever, because someone that doesn't even know a character did the research. He did the work. He put in the work.
Mm-hmm.
And went with it and said, you know what, I can do this or whatever. You know, he just didn't say, you know what, fuck it, I don't care or whatever. Or he went out of his way to be different from the previous Batman films and just made that film work in so many different levels to where it after that, I don't want to see any more Batman movies, no.
Okay, yeah, I mean, he wrote it, too. I mean, he wrote Inception, he wrote all the Batman, so, he's
Memento,
a... Yeah.
Another one of my favorite movies, which is almost kind of similar to this one as far as being a mindfuck thriller.
Insomnia, which he didn't write that, he just directed it, but that was still kind of a mindfuck, too. Prestige.
Mm-hmm.
He's got Man of Steel coming out in a few weeks. I know you're not...
He has his new project, Interceptor, I believe. Whatever.
Interstellar.
Interstellar, yeah. And I think that comes out next year or into this year.
Yes,
I can't remember.
Next year.
Okay, so next year. So I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. Whatever. Anything Nolan touches, I'm just already excited for.
Yep, he's gold.
Mm-hmm.
But who wants to start off the
movie?
You want
to start the plot off here for us, sir?
Yeah, I will. You start off... Like, I didn't even watch this movie when we talked about it yesterday because I know it from my head because I've seen it so much. But you start off in a, what was it, like a hotel?
Yeah, it was in a, it starts off with Leonardo DiCaprio's character being washed up on shore. And he's taken to Ken Watanabe's character. What's his name? Saito.
Saito.
Who's pretty much an old man in the movie or whatever. So, you know, the beginning of the movie, like at least the first 20 minutes, it's all just a puzzle, whatever. I think by the time it gets to the part where Leonardo DiCaprio finally tells Ellen Page's character about the whole wife thing, all of it just comes together in one beautiful, intricate puzzle that I just love playing with or whatever. And I was
it
like,
does.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's amazing. But yeah, it opens up with him and Saito, and the next thing it opens up with them, well, Saito being younger, while he's eating, and they're, I guess it is a hotel that they're at. Never really said what it was or whatever. And, he's pretty much telling them, hey, look, I'm here to protect your dreams and everything and trying to save you from people that try to extract you and stuff. Because pretty much Leonardo DiCaprio's been hired, him and Joseph Gordon-Levitt hired by another corporation to extract, I don't know what it was, but extract something from Mr. Saito here.
It looked like, I think it was like business plans. I think that's what they do. It's like Saito's a Japanese, like a billionaire or a millionaire. He pretty much...
Energy company.
Yeah, he pretty much has his finger on everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of strings to pull. And they're just telling him about how to that Leo DiCaprio's character, Dominic Cobb. They go by Dom. And Arthur's played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And they're just telling him about, you know, that they can stop him get information stolen from his dream.
And, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, he's one of those, I'll tell you to do something, but he goes, not to do something, but he goes and pretty much breaks on himself by doing it. And you've got JGL here, Arthur, he's just staring at him like, dude, why would you tell him something like that?
The first part, you can tell that Arthur is kind of Dom's conscience.
Yeah, he's kind of the,
To keep Dom in order.
With Cobb's character, it's more of like, I think David says in the movie, Cobb has more of an imagination than Arthur does.
Mm-hmm.
And Arthur pretty much kind of follows by the rules of how things go and stuff. So, and I, honestly, seeing those two work together, I was like, I want to see more of this.
I do too. They got very good chemistry with each other.
Very good chemistry. And you would think someone as young as Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because this was kind of his first big role.
Major role. I mean, he's.
Yeah,
I mean,
his first major role. I mean, 500 Days of Summer was pretty much considered an indie film, and everything he did before that was kind of indie as well. And even the bigger ones he did, they just wasn't, like, mainstream enough, whatever. So this was kind of his first mainstream role. And to see him act so well with Leonardo DiCaprio's character or whatever, I was just like, this guy is freaking amazing or whatever. Mm-hmm.
He really, he really got out of his shell in this movie.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the best young talents out there.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, then we meet Maul. Is that how you pronounce her name, Maul?
Yeah, Maul, and you don't know what her character is. You don't know anything of her character, and like I said, to the point where you find out it's Cobb's wife, whatever. So,
first of all, I
didn't know they were in a dream.
No, neither did I, because, you know, you see Maul, and he starts talking to her about missing the children, and I'm thinking, oh, because you don't know it's a dream, like you said, and you're just wondering what's going on here. Why is he tying this thing and she's sitting in this chair
and then she just leaves or whatever. And he's like,
That was actually funny. He goes, stay here. That was actually pretty funny.
And then you see her come in where, Leonardo DiCaprio's character is trying to, he's stealing from the safe or whatever, of Ken Watanabe. And you see her come in with Joseph Gordon-Levitt with a gun in his head. And you're just like, wait a minute, what's she doing? You don't know if she's the enemy. You don't know if she's the, I didn't know she was dead at the moment or whatever, but you don't know if she's the enemy, she's friend, is that his wife? I mean, what about the kids? What's going on here or whatever? And even though, like, you don't know what's going on in, like, the first maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you're still intrigued by it. You're still attached to it. You just because you want to put the puzzle together. You know, you want to fix this Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, and then they do some quick cuts where they show them sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Saito's on a bed. Dom's sleeping in a chair. I think Arthur was sleeping in a bed or on the floor.
He was on the chair, too, as well, and then he woke up after Maul shot him. Or, no, after a cop shot him.
Yeah, because they said he got shot in the foot or in the leg,
exactly.
And I guess that gives him a lot of pain, even when you're sleeping.
Cobb just murdered him right there, and I was just looking like, damn, I saw him come back to life, and I was just like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah, and there's they have another guy, Luke, played by Lucas Haas, who, you know, where he was from.
God, I know I've heard the name before. I'm just trying to remember. I know he was in Contraband. That's one, but I don't know like any older films he might have been.
Mars Attacks. He was the lead in Mars Attacks.
You know what? Lincoln, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you're right.
He was in Mars Attack, oh, good lord.
Yeah, he was Natalie Portman's love interest.
Oh, my God. But his role, well, Lucas Haas, he's in here short because his role gets replaced because pretty much they fail the mission. Quentin Watanabe's character, he's pretty much on to them saying, hey, like, hey, I know the dream. I know this is a dream here. And, they had to, if they failed the mission, I think the name of the company was Corvus, and they pretty much put a bounty out on Leo's team or whatever, mm-hmm. saying, hey, like, you know, you didn't complete the mission, so now we got to kill you.
Well, so, you find out that when they woke up in an apartment where there was, like, a riot going on outside, that was a dream, too.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a dream within a dream, and Ken wants to not be new because the goddamn carpet wasn't his carpet, so.
Yeah. And then Lucas Haas' character was the architect that pretty much designed the dream. And he didn't design it properly because the carpet was misused.
The architect's job here does is he pretty much designs the layouts of the dreams, which I thought that was a cool concept, actually, of how they had that.
Yeah, that was it was a smart play. Because you always wondered, you know, if you got people, numerous people dreaming, whose dream are you really using? And obviously they used Saito's dream on the train. And they just used his memories. That was what the architect does, is build the memories to make someone feel more familiar with.
And there is a lot of exposition in this film. You kind of almost you need to pay attention in order to put some of these puzzle pieces of the puzzle mm-hmm. together or whatever. You really need to pay attention because it's not that it's annoying that if you miss it or whatever, it's just that it won't take you out of the movie. It'll just be annoying to the fact that you're like, oh, I missed that part, so, you know, now I don't know what this character's purpose is for, because each character here has a standing purpose here. And, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, he plays the extractor. Like you said, Lucas Haas formerly plays the architect, but then he gets replaced with
Ellen Page.
Ellen Page. You got the Forger, who's played Tom Hardy.
The
they call him
chemist.
Hobby, the tourist.
The chemist is Yusef, and the point man's Archer. Arthur, which I don't know what a point man would do. That was never really explained.
Well, they explained that he was supposed to do the background checks when they went into Cillian Murphy's Cillian or Cillian Murphy.
I don't know. I've heard both.
When they went to his dream, whatever, and then they found out the guy Cillian Murphy was militarized. They were just like, "Hey, it was your job supposed to be checking his background and stuff like that?" So I'm assuming that he was supposed to do all the work and. As far as finding out the details and specific specificalities of everything that went around this guy.
Well, then you get to Dom's hotel room after the failed mission with Saito. He's talking to his kids, and then they're about to leave, and all of a sudden, Saito's sitting in a helicopter with let me get his name, Nash, who is Lucas Hosh, and he's pretty much. Looks like he was beaten.
He looked like somebody robbed his ass or whatever. He's just like...
Or he kind of looked like he was having urges, like a druggie.
Yeah. Looked like somebody raped him and he was looking for another victim or whatever. He's just like... He's like... You don't know what this Asian man did to me. He stuck his Asian dick in me. I couldn't help but tell him everything, man.
He was. He had like an army blanket on and shivering.
I think he was jerking off under that blanket, dude. He was just looking like, oh, you said they wouldn't come now.
Oh, so they take him away, and that's the last you see of him or hear of him.
Yeah, you
never know what happened to him.
I would assume Corbis killed him or whatever, because Kidna Watanabe is just like, he's like, I'm not going to do anything to him, but I'm pretty sure Corbis will do something to him. And I was like, oh, well, they probably got him. So.
Yeah, Saito brings up that he wants Dom and Arthur to... help him take on his competitor in the energy field, Maurice Fisher.
To perform pretty much what is called Inception on his son or whatever, because Maurice Fisher, the father, or senior in this or whatever, he's passing away, and Ken Watanabe is like, look, his son's going to take over, and they're the last thing that stands in our way between energy dominance in the world. So get rid of him. Make him not take over his father's company, and that way that company would be cease to exist, and we could be the most powerful company as far as an energy in the whole world. So
yeah, and Dom said it can't happen until Saito says he can bring him back to the United States, and that's when you find out that a little backstory on Cobb, but you don't know exactly what.
And I like that too, though. I like that most movies are like they. They try to set so much up in the beginning that it just falls flat on his ass at the end or whatever. And I like that they didn't tell me too much, but yet it was interesting enough for me to keep going on. And then when it gets halfway through the film, when you find out everything about the characters and the story that's really going on here, and you can't even call what Leonardo DiCaprio and Malls, you can't even call that a subplot, because that comes back a lot in the film. So that's almost like the second plot of the movie, whatever.
And it is.
It's a great plot of the movie, and when you find out all the information of that puzzle put together, you're just like, oh my God, or whatever. It's that plot continues all the way to the end to where you find out that Leonardo DiCaprio used Inception on her. And you're just kind of looking at him like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Your fault.
Yeah. We'll get that. We'll get more than that when we get to it. But then Cobb goes to meet his father-in-law or father?
Grandfather.
That was his grandfather?
Oh, no, that was the kid's grandfather.
Which it had to been Maul's grand. It had to been Maul's dad.
I don't know who the grandparents are or whatever, but he's played by Michael Caine, and Michael Caine pretty much tell him he just come back to reality. And Leonardo DiCaprio is like, "How the fuck I'm gonna do that? I'm a wanted man right now."
Yeah, pretty much. Caine's character taught him everything about going into someone's dreams and everything.
And I had to ask this question: is this an architect school, or is this a school for extraction? I said, because I want to go to this school.
Because it was in London.
I think it was in Paris. I believe it
was. Was it Paris?
I think that was France, or I think it was Paris, but it was in France, whatever. And when he goes to Michael Caine's character because he needs a new architect because he needs to assemble his team back together like the Avengers, you know. Matter of fact, even Ken Watanabe tells him, assemble your team. And I'm just like, I was thinking like, Avengers and so
That's funny.
And he goes to his father-in-law and pretty much tell him, or his kid's grandfather pretty much say, I need a new architect, whatever. I need someone as good as me that knows layouts and can design anything without leading into mistrial, whatever. And Mike Kane's like, why don't you build it yourself? And he's like, I can't because Ma won't let me. And then every scene you find out just a little bit more backstory of this story that's put together. He's just like, what do you mean Ma won't let him, whatever? And he doesn't explain it there, but he just tells, he's like, Ma won't let me because she keeps showing up. He's just kind of like,
I love that because it's like Nolan keep planting the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time you'd be like, why won't Ma let you? What's wrong with her? Because you never find out what happened to her until later. You're like, why won't, you know, what's going on here? That was just such a smart way to develop that story.
Mm-hmm. I would completely agree with you. And you wonder, like, why does Maul keep showing up? And then just hearing that line right there, just like, oh, so that's why that woman keeps showing up. And then Michael Caine pretty much just looks at him and just says, I got someone better. And then I was just like, when he called Ellen Page's character over, I was just like, dude, just a normal student walking and through the hallways with her. I was like, so is this a school for architect?
Is this like the advanced school for X-Men? Because she was an X-Men.
I thought it was too. I was like, wow, is this the X-Mansion? What's going on here? Because he just randomly picked her or whatever. And you probably think like, why would this normal school girl or whatever here in France, whatever, just go along with something that's actually kind of, you know, illegal to do and is a crime, whatever. And then they even explain that part when her and Leonardo DiCaprio go for pretty much a walk, and then she finds out she's been in a dream, and she's upset by it, but at the same time, he's just like, she'll be back because she's never seen anything like this, and she will need more of that rush in her, you know, mm-hmm. So she comes back, and she's just like, yeah, there's quite nothing like that, the whole creativity of creating a world like that, too. So I was like, I guess that would draw you back into that, huh?
Yeah, and that was the first amazing scene in the dream world that they did, where they're sitting at the coffee shop, and then she's mm-hmm. learning what's going on, and all of a sudden the coffee shop explodes, and you got slow motion coming here, and she's just looking around, and she goes, "If it's a dream, why are you why are you tensed up or whatever?" And yeah, then she just gets drilled by like a table or something. I'm like, "Damn!"
And you see that shit, and then he just wakes up and tells her, he's like, "Just because it's a dream doesn't mean it doesn't hurt," you know. So, in this scene, too, whatever, when they go back in, you see Ellen Page, like, playing around with the world or whatever, and you see her just turn one side part of the street over upside down, and they're walking on it, and she creates glasses or whatever, and Ellen Page gets introduced to Maul's character.
Because what was the rule? Don't make something that you're familiar with?
Yeah, don't make something you're familiar with. Well, you know, that wasn't so much a rule. That was just a rule for Cobb, because they were in his subconscious of his dream, so he was having flashbacks of Maul and shit.
Yeah.
So wherever he's going to be at, most likely Maul's going to be at. That's why he can't see the layout or whatever, because if it's something that him and Maul used to do, whatever, most likely he's going to remember and she's going to show up in his subconscious, whatever. But one of the rules were, which they showed in here, is you can't change too much of the world around when you're in the dream or whatever, because like he said, they're like white blood cells, whatever, that my subconscious will know and start attacking you, whatever.
How creepy was that?
Yeah, it was, whatever. Just seeing people just stare at her or whatever, and she's like, why are people staring at me? He's like, well, because you're in here fucking with shit right now, so.
Yeah, it was just creepy. Just people, all of a sudden, she's changing stuff, and people just stare at her. I'm like, that's really creepy. That's like straight horror movie creepy.
I thought that was pretty creative about the whole white blood cell attacking thing, whatever. I thought that was an intelligent thing to add to it or whatever. And you could tell Christopher Nolan put a lot of time and detail into this film.
Yeah. And Maul shows up, kills her. Her name's Ariadne?
Yeah, Ariadne. And,
which is a weird name.
She pretty much, well, she wasn't France.
But she's American.
Yeah, but, you know, well, she's Canadian, but, you know. What does that tell you, too?
Well, I don't know. I know she's like 5'0", like 5'1" or whatever. She's small as fuck.
Good. I like them like that. That girl's hot, shit.
She looked hot in this movie.
Tear her everywhere.
You probably could.
So many things with her or whatever. You wouldn't know that. You know what? The fucking demon of Paranormal Activity would be calling me and be like, I see some fucked up shit right now, whatever, because that things I do to her, but anyway.
Before we continue, you and I just saw seeing Evan Rachel Wood was Nolan's first choice for Ariadne.
Oh, wow.
But she turned it down.
Oh, good.
But Nolan also considered Emily Blunt, Rachel McAdams, Emma Roberts, Jesse Schramm, and Carey Mulligan.
You know, I say, oh, good, but, because I do like Ellen Page more than all of the actresses or whatever, but I say, oh, good, but one thing Nolan has proven with all of his movies is he works well with any actors. He knows how to bring out the best in them.
He was. I mean, Emily Blunt wouldn't have been bad. I like her.
Mm-mm. And I think working with Nolan, everybody gave shit to Nolan about Anne Hathaway, and look at her.
Yeah. It
She's
was
a
prior
fucking star now.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't like Carey Mulligan. Rachel McAdams, it might have been she might have been too famous for the role.
Yeah. I like Ellen Page in this role, though. I really do, or whatever. And I thought this was something she needed to, something like a big blockbuster, smart, intelligent film like this.
Yeah, because that's all she did really was indie movies, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, X-Men. She was the third Kitty Pryde in the third X-Men movie.
Yeah, that ain't really saying much or whatever. You know?
No, and her part was small, so.
I thought she was good as the role. I think she plays a great Kitty, if you ask me. But I think they gave her nothing to do in the film. And...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we also find out, we see Yusef, we meet him, the chemist, who has a power.
We meet Tom Hardy's character.
Oh, yeah, we meet Eames. Eames, right? First.
Yeah, Eames was a. You know what? Tom Hardy, in his movies, he's not the talking type too much or whatever, but this one, he was very charismatic.
Yeah, he was very, he played a con man.
Oh yeah, pretty much. So, you know, him and Joseph Gordon-Levitt on screen together was great together as well. I want to see those two work more together as well.
I did like their little rivalry. It was kind of like a brotherly rivalry.
Yeah, it was whatever, like, Tom Hardy was the older brother, just trying to teach Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like, hey, man, come on. You don't need to play by the rules all the time. Especially in that scene that they show in the trailer where he's just like, you must dream a little bit bigger, darling, or whatever. And he pulls out the bigger gun and just blows him up, and they just look at each other, and he's like...
Yeah, that was great. I mean, Tom Hardy's, he's starting to be a great actor.
He is. He's one of my favorite actors.
I mean, if you have not seen Warrior, seriously, go see Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
We were definitely...
talks in the movie, but yet he has more charisma than Will Smith's career.
There you go. But this movie pretty much broke him out. I mean, I think, was Warrior before this or after this? After this.
It was after, he did Bronson, which was, I don't think anybody saw that. He was great in that too, whatever. That was like his first big role as far as being anything.
Well, yeah, he was like minor role in like Black Hawk Down and stuff, but this one broke him out. I think this one won him Bane.
Yeah. I mean, Nolan, if obviously Nolan was going to do a... You knew Nolan was going to introduce some of these characters into the Batman universe or whatever, and I'm glad he picked with Joseph Gordon-Levitt being Robin, to be honest, or whatever. I was just like, he either can do Robin or Spider-Man. I was like, either one, goddammit, just pick him to be...
You're right. But they meet him in some, I don't know what town. It's some... Mubasa? Okay.
Yeah,
and
Mubasa, whatever, which was pretty much surrounded by Corvus, the company that's looking for Leo's care. And he's just pretty much, you know, he's just telling him, like, he's like, oh, Inception is not impossible, whatever. It's easy to do, whatever. It's just, no, it's not impossible to do. It's just fucking difficult. But, you know,
yeah.
It's like more about having an imagination, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character lacks that imagination.
One thing I did notice about Eames right before he meets Dom, he's playing poker, I believe, and he had chips. And he
I
had
don't know what he was playing. I don't know.
And he had a little bit of chips, and then all of a sudden he just moves his hand, and he has a ton. I'm like, are we in a dream?
Well, what happened was he was cashing his chips from what I saw. So and then he lost when he was playing. He lost on that first round, or whatever. And then I guess he just called out or whatever and went to go cash his chips in.
Okay, because I thought he had more chips. Because I thought he kind of like moved his hand. He had a little bit of chips, and he waved his hand and cashed them in, and he had more chips than he had.
And I know Leo took one of them from him, so.
Yeah. So you meet him, and then the chemist, Yusuf, who shows that he has a powerful sedative.
Leonardo DiCaprio pretty much explains that we're doing three layers down or whatever. And they're looking at him like, three layers down, that's impossible or whatever. And
yeah.
But he shows them, it's not impossible. I got the sedative for that or whatever. And
yeah, then,
it must have been powerful because, yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio wake up going like, oh, shit, what happened?
Yeah, because he gets put under, and that's where you see more mall stuff. And then he wakes up, and you find out about the totem.
You think he'd be scared to be be going under these goddamn dreams, and he'd have after now.
Was it like Freddy Krueger? Come on.
Hey, well, shit, you got fucking mall. Might as well be Freddy Krueger. Did you see that scene where Ellen? She was shaking that elevator cage at Ellen Page. You shit. I was like, good lord, she's scared.
Yeah, that was. I mean, I still think it was creepy when she walks down there and she steps on the glass, and then all of a sudden she turns her head.
She turns around real slow, whatever. She's just like, "What are you doing here?" I was like, "Get out of there, elevator."
But I just like wondered because this is. Here's a question I'm going to ask you because I know I'm jumping so far ahead. Do you? Because when he wakes up from his dream and he turns to the totem and he goes in the bathroom, washes his face, does his totem, which was the top spinning. And it does not stop. He stops it himself because Saito broke it up. Do you think he never woke up?
Oh, no. I mean, because technically, it's supposed to still keep spinning. Man. It's not supposed to topple over. It's not supposed to... It would just keep spinning and spinning no matter what.
But if you force it, he forced it.
I would assume it keeps spinning even if you just knock it off.
Okay. Because that's a lot. That's where a lot of people questioned about that he did not. It did not stop. He stopped it itself.
Sorry, I'll take a sip. But
oh, that's cool. But that's what. That's a lot of message boards that I read said that he could have been dream. He still could have been dreaming this whole time.
Yeah, I think he was all right in that one or whatever. Because,
okay. I just wanted to get your opinion on that one.
That'd have been too many goddamn dreams for him then or whatever, and he should have just fell in limbo then at that point, whatever. Because. That would have been four different layers of dreams you'd have been in. I think that's a little too much to be going on over there with those dreams. Plus, it never ended with. I think that's adding a little too much for fans, but putting too much on the story itself.
Okay.
They never went back to that place or whatever, or that whole thing never came back into the movie.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious because it's a valid point to bring up. So. But then we find out Fisher died, or Maurice Fisher died,
yeah,
Robert's
so,
dad,
I'm
and then
the
they're gonna, yeah, some Avengers assemble.
Yeah, it's African Watanabe to beat Nick Fury. He's the Asian Nick Fury, or whatever.
Which is funny. He goes, "Well, Sydney to Australia is the longest flight in the world."
He goes, "Sydney to L.A."
Yeah, the L.A. And he goes, "Oh, I bought the airplane. I bought the airline," which is a funny line.
Yeah, because he was just like, it fits my style. And I just was like, well, there go your 10 hours then.
Because they had to figure out how to get Fisher to be on the same flight with them. And so they can sedate him without stewardesses and the pilots and passengers seeing it. Because there was a certain plane, I can't remember what it was, that...
That would have been funny as hell had they did that on a regular plane.
And coach.
Full of people and shit, like, kids going, Mommy, what are they doing? Don't look, whatever. The kid would have been fucking with the machine equipment and shit, whatever.
They may pay the
wires.
They paid the flight attendant to get the, you know, to activate the machine, which is, how do you really bring that up to somebody?
Yeah, it's like, you tell the stewardess, you just go, oh yeah, how do you bring that up? Like, excuse me, miss, I'm paying you some money to, never mind this dream machine here I have. What it does is it takes us into this person's dream right here, whatever. But I'm paying you money to not bother us while we do this, whatever. I'd have been like, how much are you paying me now?
Exactly. It's like, that's kind of like a little awkward conversation to start.
I know, honestly, I would have robbed him, motherfucker.
Could you imagine the wake up and the flight attendants shipping through their pockets? Like,
imagine you wake up and no clothes on and shit. Like, nice soup, dude.
So...
I take Joseph Gordon-Levitt with me and shit. Truck in a car and shit, drive off, whatever, have ties to a chair, whatever. Everybody wakes up in the next day and be like, oh, I feel like I've been raped by someone, whatever. And Paige, Ellen Page is the only one that wakes up like, I feel fine. Nothing really happened. Joseph Gordon-Levitt goes, why do my ass hurts when I'm like, because I raped you, man. Now shut up. Put this mask on. What is that? It's a Spider-Man mask. Now put it on. You're going to make a movie, goddammit.
So before the whole flight, we learn about the whole plan and about the kicks. And then Ariadne is like, what's a kick? And this is where pretty much Joseph Gordon-Levitt pretty much explains the whole plot of the movie.
It pretty much explains how the whole dream world works in this montage segment of what their plan was going to be. And this is where you probably need to pay attention the most as far as so you can understand how the dream world works and how everything goes. And I thought everything in here, excuse me, was just ingenious here. I was just like, wow, this is amazing or whatever. And then when they finally put the plan together, which pretty much gets fucked up as soon as it gets in, because I don't know how a train came in here, but obviously Cobb had his subconscious put in here.
Well, the funny thing was, this was Yusef's dream, and he had to go to the bathroom before, and it was raining.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was a funny thing, and then Fisher gets in a cab, and then Hardy, and then Eames gets in the cab, and he starts being like a silver-tongued, he's like, oh shit, I'll split it with you. You know, being all slick and everything. That's why I love Hardy in this movie.
Yeah, that's why I say this is probably one of his best roles. He was just charismatic as hell in this one, whatever. And like, this is where you grow to like him as a person, as an actor himself, whatever. But, so yeah, the next, you know what, they drive off, and then this fucking train comes out of nowhere in the middle of downtown, well, it was downtown L.A. in the movie, but in the movie, I don't know I guess it was just a dream, whatever, so.
It kind of looked like New York. I don't know why. I don't know why. It just kind of looked like New York to me.
I recognize the streets. I used to work over there. So that was definitely L.A. or whatever. And then a goddamn train comes out of nowhere. And you learn that freaking Fisher, Cillian Murphy, Robert Fisher Jr., his mind's been trained for this or whatever. So he has a bunch of military guys come out and pretty much just shoot up these cars or whatever. And that's when Ken Watanabe gets shot. They escape away, and then this is pretty much where the story comes to understanding at all of the subplots of Leonardo DiCaprio's character. They pretty much explain that we're in three layers deep, whatever. If you kill, if you shoot him, because one of the rules was if you were in pain, whatever, you die, then you come back to the real world. But they're so heavily sedated that if they die, then they'll go into limbo.
Yeah, and then. What Ariadne? What's limbo? And here's Joseph Gordon-Levitt telling the whole plot of the movie again. So
yeah, he's pretty much telling the whole plot of the movie, and then they're pretty much saying like Cobb's been in limbo or whatever before. And it's like, oh, how long were you in there for? About 50 years. God damn.
Yeah, and then they
that's where Cobb explains more about Maul, and this was the best scene in the movie for me, as far as like the drama of it, or whatever. When Cobb explains what he did to Maul and how, well, he didn't say that he put Inception in her, but he incepted it in her mind or whatever, and he was explaining the part where she pretty, when they came back to the real world, she had this thought in her mind that it still wasn't real, so she set up this elaborate plan where she pretty much went to, like, therapists and they cleared her as a sane person. Mm-hmm. And she told the lawyer that, oh, I fear for my life and Cobb might be threatening to kill me or whatever, so he goes to the place where they're from their honeymoon, the hotel, whatever, and this trash. He looks out the window and he sees Maul standing out there on the other side. He's just looking at her like, Maul, what the hell are you doing? And then she pretty much tells him, like, look, I'm pretty much, if you don't kill yourself now, you're going to be fucked either way, so you need to jump with me, Cobb, so we can go back to the real world. And he's just like, no, this is the real world. Maul, don't do it or whatever. And then as he's just yelling at her, she starts giving this riddle about the train or whatever. You hear the train coming, whatever. And Leonardo DiCaprio, it looked like this is real life for him because he just started shouting. He's like, no, God damn it.
The one thing I loved when he was explaining it to Ariadne, because this was just these two talking, the look he gave her, Ariadne, after Maul jumped, it was just like you felt for him. It was just like it happened. You know,
when she did jump, and he just like, Jesus Christ. That's what he said. That was the most powerful scene in the movie or whatever, because when she lived, like, I personally wasn't expecting her to jump, whatever, and then when you see her body just fall down from the ground, he grabs on the window and starts crying. He's just like, Jesus.
Yeah. Which kind of wonders, how did she get across? to just.
It looked like that other hotel room she was in was empty as well. So
oh,
I'm
so
just,
she paid for two hotel rooms?
I'm assuming she paid. It looked like they were rich. I
Well, you know,
so
you
that,
don't. We
that's
don't know
okay.
how much money they were making from doing this.
Yeah, so I mean, they never go into the details of how much money, but I would assume it's a lot if they're doing it for major corporations like this. But yeah, so I thought that was like one of the best. And then, like you said, the look he gave Ellen Page, or whatever, you just like, that's when in the movie, I remember in the theaters, I just put my hand over my mouth and was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, you really felt for him. You were like, he's trying to get over it, but his subconscious, because he pretty much drove her to kill herself.
And you kind of don't know that yet, because Ariadne gives him that speech, like, because like you said, how he looked at her, she gives him the speech like, what happened to Maul wasn't your fault, you just need to stop blaming yourself, it's not your fault. And he's looking at her like, yeah, but it is my fault. You still, and you kind of agree with her at first, because you don't know that until the end of the movie, that it kind of was his fault, so.
Yeah. Yeah, but like before the whole trip, Ariadne kind of snuck into his dream and saw everything.
Yeah, she snuck into the dream and saw the memories that he was holding in or trying to keep.
That's when I did kind of find Ellen Page kind of annoying.
Yeah, I kind of did it because I rewatched it again or whatever, just for this whatever, and I watched it. And I was like, Ellen Page is kind of the stuff she's saying, whatever. It's just like, you know, you kind of don't understand.
Yeah, that's
just
yeah.
A kid.
Yeah, she was just a high school student or a college student. College student, I guess.
I don't know what the hell that was. That was a school for mutants, okay? Okay. I think she was learning how to be Shadow Cat Bear or something. You know what it was? I think they took her and put her at that school, whatever, because she said, look, I don't want to be an X-4 or nothing like that, or a Wolverine origin or no shit like that. So can you just move this set from that set over here and put me in a Scepter?
Yeah.
I got no fucking credit in that movie. Okay.
But we go back to with Fisher, they kidnap him, and then Eames transforms into his godfather, Peter Browning, played by Tom Berenger.
Well, I thought was great in the movie as well.
Yeah, Berenger is a hidden talent, but he just doesn't get a lot of respect.
No, he doesn't. He was so great in this movie, whatever. I thought he played his role so fucking well, too.
Mm-hmm. And he's trying to convince him that Fisher to reconsider his father's will.
Yeah, because he's pretty much telling him that, like, look, your father did love you, whatever, because they're trying to make Cillian Murphy's character here actually like his father, whatever, because they have some of a weird relationship, whatever. And you can see the look on Tom Hardy's face as more of Cillian Murphy keeps talking, whatever. He's just like, God damn, their relationship is fucked up.
There was a great line that I love that Joseph Gordon-Levitt did. When he goes, I got good authority that you know the combination. And then you hear Berenger screaming, and he goes, what's that? He goes, good authority.
Authority.
I love that line.
That was a good line. It was funny because he's like, Tom Hardy's character, when he was playing his godfather, he was just like, he's like, well, maybe he gave you a number or something when your mother died. He looked at him and said, you know what he told me when my mother died? He said, son, it's nothing really to say right about now.
Yeah.
The look on Tom Hardy's face, he just, what he said, oh, fuck. His granddad was a dick, too.
Yeah.
And it was funny, because as they was putting, they drugged Cillian Murphy, and then Tom Hardy came out the band with it, and he's just like, that boy's relationship with his father is more messed up than we thought. So they off, and then this is when they get into the dream number three.
Well, two. The hotel.
Oh yeah, that's right. The hotel is number two.
Because Fisher's subconscious comes and starts attacking. That's where you get the line. You got to dream a little bigger, darling. And
yeah, exactly.
Yusef
so, yeah,
is just driving a van.
So yeah, they go to dream number two, and then this is pretty much where they go with a plan that pretty much Leonardo DiCaprio is going to act like he's a personal security guard for Fisher here. So he's going to tell him everything about what's going on, except he's going to make it look like he's a good guy here. And it goes back to everybody looking at Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Ellen Page's character, whatever. I love this part, whatever. He's just like, quick, give me a kiss. And she was like, they're still looking at us. He's like, well, it's worth a shot.
Yeah,
that
was
bastard stole my line. I would have did something.
That was kind of, I really wondered if there was going to be like a connection between Ariadne and Cobb.
You know what? there was interviews, because these two promoted the movie together a lot or whatever, and there was a lot of interviews where people in the comments kept saying, you see how she looks at Joseph Gordon-Levitt or whatever? I don't know if she had a thing for him going on or whatever in this movie, but I was watching those views or whatever, and I was like, wow, she does look at him with, like, glowing in her eyes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a handsome, he's a handsome young fellow.
That's my man crush right there. I tell Paige, you need to wait your turn, honey. That's right there, whatever. That's my ass.
Then we see Ames as a hot young blonde trying to pick up Fisher. Saito is... Oh, he's better after the gunshot, but he's still bleeding.
Yeah, the more dreams they go into deep or whatever, the less pain he feels of it, but he still can feel it.
Mm-hmm. And then Eames stole Fisher's wallet and pretty much takes away his subconscious. And then he just dumps it, or he gives it to Saito, and Saito dumps it into a trash.
And then, you know, to speed this part along, whatever, get to the part where Browning walks in on when Fisher and them go to the hotel room, and they pretty much switch the negativity of what Fisher had for his father towards Browning character. They pretty much convince Fisher, this man is probably working for the kidnappers that kidnapped you, whatever, and we should go inside his dream. And once they dose him up or whatever, they pretty much tell him, nah, we just lied to him. We're going inside Fisher's mind, whatever. But you know.
Pretty much. Arthur stays back and. Eames, Cobb, Ariadne, and Fisher, and Saito go into the level Dream 3, which is a snowy compound, I guess.
Yeah, kind of a Modern Warfare 3 lookalike.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, and it looked really good too. Whatever. This is where the action kicks up now.
Yes.
They say, oh, this is where the action kicks up and the music.
Oh, yes, the music. Hans Zimmer is just a god in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
the music is nonstop. The score is nonstop once we get to the third realm here or whatever, because all you hear in the background, you hear that little twerk right there, and it gets louder as the intense the scene gets or whatever. It gets louder, and I'm just like, I fucking love that or whatever. It's driving me in with the movie.
Yeah. We find out that the cool thing is when Yusef was driving in the first dream, every time he like turns or crashes or something, each dream it kind of goes down.
This is the part where we get this badass. This is well shot scene or whatever of Joseph Gordon-Levitt in the hotel room as it kind of turns upside down and sideways. He's fighting like the subconscious of Fisher's mind or whatever, and he's like crawling the walls, or whatever. He's moving around. It's just like this is, I love this right here. I was like, this is, well, I had to stand up and give an applause right there. I was like, this is the most well-done fight choreographed scene I've seen in a while.
Yeah, that was a very cool, cool scene. And I think that scene was not in the trailer, I don't believe.
It was one of him walking on the wall. That scene was in the trailer.
Was it? Because I remember when he walked into the room where they were sleeping, that they were all floating. That's when Yusef drove off the bridge.
They did show the one where he was running in the wall, though. I remember that, actually.
Okay. So Yusef starts the kick, which is the how to wake up from a dream. And he's pretty much slow motion falling off the bridge. So then...
Yeah, but the first kick was him hitting the barrier off the bridge, whatever, and they heard it, so they had to speed it up in the third dream, whatever. And this is where you see pretty much Ian's character becomes a badass. He just pretty much whoops the shit out of every...
He does. He, like, ties a string around some trees and hits guys on skis, throws a grenade in there in a truck and gives them...
Their jet skis, or not their jet skis, their snowmobiles or whatever. Yeah. Rise up, throws a grenade at the main truck, whatever, and he just gives them a thumbs up and just keeps going. I was like, eh.
Like, good job.
Yeah, he's like, good job, bro. You know what? They should have played that bang music whenever they had him on stage.
Yeah, that would have been really cool. And then Ariadne and Cobb are pretty much scoping out where they're supposed to be going.
As Saito and Fisher, they make their way into the compound, and then Saito's pretty much dying or whatever. He's coughing up blood there, and then you see Fisher makes it into the compound, but then as he's about to make it to the door, guess who shows up in the goddamn behind him again? Fucking Maul.
And that's the only reason, because Cobb asked Ariadne if she'd built any hidden access ways, and she goes, I'm not supposed to tell you. He goes, we'll tell them, and he must have heard it.
Well, she told him. She said Eames made a passageway or whatever.
Yeah, and so obviously Cobb knew, so that brought Maul into the dream.
But I gotta tell him, I was just like, because after she told him, he told her, now tell them or whatever. I was like, well, then did she need to tell you then?
Yeah, true.
I was like, because you know, if you find out, you know, like, oh shit, because once she comes down, he hesitates, and he is a sniper on her, but he hesitates or whatever, and Ellen Page's like, he's not real or whatever, and she fucking just shoots Cillian Murphy right there or whatever. He's like, and then when they all make it to the chamber or whatever, he's just looking like, Leonardo DiCaprio just says, oh, I'm sorry, but we failed. And they're just looking around, just like, really?
Yeah, he was like wanting to give up and everything, and I was like, that's what I kind of thought too. I'm like, Cobb really just quits this easily?
Yeah, I was like, man, y'all run it this far or whatever and they were just going to set the charges and blow the place up, and I guess however that worked for her. But Ellen Page is like, no, he's still in there. He's in the limbo with Maul or whatever, and we can save him, you know, we go get him, whatever. So they pretty much go with that plan, and then they pretty much wake up and they go to Maul's, the place where she's at with Fisher, and this is the part where it got deep. Every time the movie slowed down to show you Leonardo DiCaprio and Maul, you just kind of like, damn, man, this is a fucked up situation.
You really hated, I really hated her towards this part, too.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of felt sorry for her at times, actually, in this part, whatever, because it gets explained, because as Leonardo DiCaprio is telling her the story, whatever, like, telling her the story of how she was in the dream world, whatever, and she couldn't go back because she had no belief that it was the real world anymore, or whatever. And then he pretty much tells her, like, I planted Inception in her, or whatever. And you see her start crying, or whatever, and you just kind of like, and she's like, you planted that in me, or whatever. And she's like, why would you do that to your wife? And you just kind of like, yeah, why would you do that? But he, like he said in that scene, or whatever, he had no idea that once they got back to the real world, it would affect her like a cancer, or whatever. And that's all she could think about is killing herself to get back to the real world, or whatever. And I was just looking like, wow, this is some deep shit right here.
But it's funny that he plays her because he goes, she's like, you can't have Fisher. And he goes, I'll stay with you. And she goes, okay, he's over on the porch.
Yeah, you can take him, just get the hell up out of here, whatever. Because this is the part where the other kick came in, of the music. The music kicked in. It was like, oh, we got to go, whatever. So Ellen Page takes, and I love it because she was like, you got to come with me, whatever. And she was like, Leonardo DiCaprio was like, I'm not going with you guys, but I'm not staying with her because she's not real. And Maul looked at him and was like, the fuck you just say to me?
Yeah, then Ariadne threw Fisher off the bridge, and he dies. Well,
she picks up a knife and stab cops. She's like, is this still real? And he said, look on Leonardo DiCaprio, yes, oh, I felt real. You bitch.
Yeah, Fisher wakes up, Eames hurries him up because the kick's going, because Arthur set his kick of the explosion in the elevator shaft, which is very smart, too. Mm-hmm.
And don't forget the explosions that Eames set around the whole complex of the place, too.
Yeah, that was cool. Fisher goes, meets his dad, and his dad opens up the safe after he dies, after a very moving conversation between the two.
Yeah, that he tells him, because this whole time, Fisher Jr. thinks that, like, his father's last words was he was a disappointment when really, his last words was, no, he's disappointed that he wanted to be like his father. And he's saying, pretty much, don't be like me or whatever. And so, and then that's when, like you said, they have pretty much a powerful conversation there or whatever. And I was just like, ah. Oh. So, they pretty much succeeded with Inception or whatever. And then you see Maul, it goes back to Maul and Cobb having their little chat or whatever. And Maul's like, I thought you said we grow old together. And Leonardo DiCaprio's like, but we did or whatever. And then they show, like, flashbacks of them walking together as, like, old people. And I was just like, oh my god, this movie is so brilliant.
It fucked with your mind a little bit, but it was good because
it's so depressing at times, yet so powerful though. And I was just like, oh my god, this movie has me on every scene. It just has my attention.
It is after, Fisher opens up the safe and there's a pinwheel with a picture of him as a kid with his dad, and that's the way as soon as Eames sees that, he blows it up. That initiates the last kick. Ariadne pretty much falls to her death, wakes up three straight times.
Then Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he set the explosion off in the elevators, and next note they fall down, and then that's when Yusef falls into the river or whatever, and everybody pretty much wakes up except for Cobb or whatever, and they're dragging his body out or whatever, and they're
And
like,
that
oh, did
goes
he
to the
signal?
opening of the movie.
Yeah, and goes to the opening of the movie, and then you realize like, oh, that's Ken Watanabe's character, because he pretty much dies once they get to the place where Fisher got shot. And so, why Cobb stayed behind was so he could save Ken Watanabe's character, Saito. So, Saito can fucking make sure that he don't get arrested when they land. So, and I thought this, when it came back around to this, I was just like, that is fucking great right there, whatever. Because you don't know what that scene meant or at the beginning of the film. You're just like, okay, what is this? And they pretty much have a conversation where Saito is like old as hell. He's just looking at him. He's just like, Cobb, is that you? Whatever, and then he's like, come back to the real world, Saito. And then Saito picks up a gun, and it goes to them back on the airplane, and there, and Leonardo DiCaprio wakes up, and he's looking around at everybody, and I was like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Ellen Page smiling. I was like, yeah, those two just got done fucking.
I thought so too. The way they were looking, like, yeah, we did.
Yeah, while you guys were sleeping or whatever, we fucked.
The thing that was funny is when Saito wakes up, he's pretty much like on the armrest of the chair.
The way he woke up, he looked confused. He was just like,
Like, did he have a bad dream?
oh, I shouldn't eat all that fried ice. Like,
Yeah, and then you see then Leo, then Dom just gives him the look, like,
yeah,
make the fucking call.
because Leonardo DiCaprio and Cobb, he wakes up and he looks at everybody like just like Saito. He's looking confused. He's just like, did we really just do that? Did we perform Inception? Did we get it? And then he looks at Saito, and he looks at him like, motherfucker, you better get on that phone and
That was really cool, and because we skipped it, but if Dom couldn't come back to the U.S.
yeah.
So if he would have landed without Saito's call, he would have been arrested on the spot.
Yeah, that was the reason why Cobb took the job in the first place. So, because Saito promised that he could clear him of all charges or whatever, and he can go back home and see his kids or whatever. So next you know, he makes that call, and then pretty much he goes back and he gets off the plane, and that's when that music kicks in, that bad, I forgot what song this was, whatever, but that badass score that kicks in, whatever, and you just see him walking, walking past, there's no dialogue, and he walks off with Michael Caine, his father-in-law, whatever, and he goes into the house, whatever, he spins his toddler or whatever, and next you know, he sees his kids, and he turns around, he goes and just talks with them, whatever, and then you see the thing, toddler, still spinning, but it starts to wobble a little bit.
Yeah. That's
And then
when.
it just ends.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to keep you guessing to see if it was all a dream. That's why I brought up the point from earlier. But you saw it wobble.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole thing of that, the toddler, which why I say it's all wobbles, it's not supposed to wobble, it's just supposed to keep spinning and spinning, whatever. It would never topple over or wobble at all, according to what Bob said. That's how Maul saw it. So I was just going, but I like that it added that feature in there to because it had you still thinking after the movie was over. You're just like, oh, so did he make it, or what happened? This, whatever. This movie, I was thinking about this damn thing for a whole week when I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, it really kind of, it's one of the movies that actually makes you wonder what happened, which is,
Yeah,
that's
and they
why no
actually
one
made
made
a
such a beautiful movie.
they actually made a comic book a prequel of how it all started, well, how it began or whatever, and how he got the job with Corvus and all that, whatever. I remember reading it right after the movie came
Oh,
out,
it's
though. So,
Corbel.
yeah, Corvus, it was actually a pretty good comic too, whatever. And I was like, wow, they should have just continued this. They only made that one book, if I recall. So,
Do you think there'll be a sequel?
nah.
No?
Christopher Nolan said he'll never make a sequel to this, whatever. Yeah, that's one thing I love about Nolan, whatever. He's just like, that was the movie. There is nothing else to add to it, whatever. That's the movie, whatever. So don't look for sequel or not.
Would you want to see a sequel?
No.
No?
I think it would ruin the movie a little bit, actually, whatever. I don't think there's no need for a sequel.
Okay, that's fair enough. I kind of want to see maybe another heist, so to speak.
Maybe if they took out Cobb's character all you know, just went with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character.
Okay, well, yeah. Yeah, maybe because this is probably one of the most original movies that you can ever find.
Yeah, it is one of the, probably for that year, 2010, it was one of the most originals I had seen in a while, actually, and I thought it was fantastic. I fucking loved this film, whatever, when I saw that, and then the score in it was beautiful. I thought it was well shot, directed by Nolan, like you said earlier, he did a great job at directing it. The cinematography in it was great. Hans Zimmer did a great job. All the actors in here was just phenomenal, to the point where, like I said, this is probably the best ensemble all-star cast I've seen.
Yeah, there is not one bad actor in this movie.
No, there's none, nobody in here that I was just like, oh, why did I have to put him in, or why did he do that, or, you know.
I know you got some people that you already worked with, Nolan, Murphy and Kane and Watanabe, now Hardy and Gordon Levitt. They worked with Nolan, so Nolan knows his actors. He
Yeah, and Nolan knows how to bring out the best in actors. In his movies, he usually stick to putting at least a couple of, or one or two or a couple of his actors in the movie, whatever, because every actor he always gets, I love each one of them, and I always want to see them do more work like this, whatever, and I enjoyed the movie. We can get to ratings now. I'll give it a full-on see it.
I'll give it a full bucket.
Yeah, so, that's Inception here, so. Ready to move on to some comments here we have.
Sure.
So, we got one from Cody Steele. Actually, this was from our previous episode we did, Throwback Tuesday, episode one. And he says, this was a good idea for a show to put on the site. I personally can't wait for the next episode. Well, thank you, Cody Steele. So that will be posted, the next episode will be this Tuesday.
You know what's funny?
Go ahead.
He's got the same name as my nephew.
Cody, I like that name actually.
It's powerful.
Yeah, it is. Whatever. Superman ain't got shit on that name.
Clark Kent, come on.
Man of Steel my ass, whatever. Cody Steel's in the way. But next comment here, the last one we're gonna read here is from Robert Jr. Galvan. Says, "What's up, TPO? Just wanted to say that the Throwback Movie Review Podcast is a nice concept. I really enjoy listening to it, and hopefully more to come. District 9 was a dope movie, and I too own the DVD. I really hope they make a District 10 or sequel because that ending left me wanting more, or whatever. LOL. Oh, and the antagonist, I agree. Dude was scary as shit. He's talking about the guy in the wheelchair.
I must have that hand.
He was a good actor, but menacing as hell. Great casting work overall, and special effects was tight too. Anyways, keep up the great work. Can't wait to listen to more podcasts, even if Leighton is still on them. LOL, I'm fucking with you. P.S. Details on Comic-Con event. I need my VIP pass. LOL, Robert from the Bay. Well, Leahy won't be on everything because I just fired him.
Wait, what?
I'm joking. He said even if Leahy was still on them. So.
Oh, I thought you were serious for a second.
Yeah, he's fired now. Get out of here, Leahy. Tired of white people.
Well, thanks for the comments. Those
Well,
were.
nobody knows you're white, so see, don't worry.
Well, now they do. Damn
Might
it.
have thought you were Hispanic with that name. You know, see, you know.
I was trying
See.
to cease. Well, thanks for the comments. Hope to hear some more for this episode.
VIP passes, man, you just come on down, man. You already got VIP or whatever. But yeah, so. So that was Throwback Tuesday, episode two, Inception or whatever. I'm your host, Phenomenal.
This is Z.